The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
More than half of Americans say they would need at least $100,000 a year to be financially comfortable.
The benchmark of a six-figure salary used to be the gold standard income. It represented the tipping point of finally earning a disposable income and building a savings, spending based on your wants, not just your needs.
The American dream is what makes a middle-class lifestyle. You're able to pay your bills. You're able to put food on the table, put a roof over your family's head, and you have some additional savings.
Now, people making well over six figures are still living paycheck to paycheck. What used to symbolize financial freedom is now keeping people stressed about making ends meet.
26% say they would need more. A salary in the range of $100,000 to $149,000 per year would make them feel financially comfortable.
I think, unfortunately, what has happened is that wages haven't kept up with the cost of living, by and large, for the last 50 years or so. And so it becomes increasingly hard for many families to be able to attain that sort of middle-class lifestyle, that American dream.
Good morning, everyone. It's nice to be with you. My name is Andrew Locher. I'll be your guest host today on the Trumpet Daily. I would like to thank you for making the Trumpet Daily part of your regular news routine. Hopefully you're a subscriber to our Trumpet magazine. I'd highly recommend you do that as well. We have a lot of other products for you to consume if that works out for you. I do think you get the most balanced approach to world events here on this program. But I think the leg up that we have, and I'm sure you noticed this, we're able to really, I think, very carefully and accurately tell you what's going to happen in the future. So just explaining what we're seeing today, but then also helping you to look forward. The subject of today's program, the American Dream, has a lot to do with just looking forward and how difficult that's becoming. That's probably true for every detail in life now. Geopolitical scenes, social lives that we all lead, everything just seems so unpredictable, so difficult to manage. We would love to hear your feedback. If you're so inclined, you can send an email to td@thetrumpet.com. You can feel free to call us to request literature. The toll-free number is 866-930-3024. Or if it's more convenient, you can visit our website, thetrumpet.com. Again, we have a wealth of information there for you. We have actually several offerings that help you just work with your finances from a godly perspective. And if we have time toward the end of the program, I'll really reinforce that point that you need to make God your financial planner. There's just simply no other way to survive today. We are in the midst of celebrating the Feast of Tabernacles. We're all very excited about that. The location that I'll be at has over 700 like-minded people enjoying a lot of fellowships, really beneficial instruction. Just a great time of year for all of us. We have sites all over the world. Some of your hosts and guest hosts, they're just scattered all around. It's beautiful weather outside. It's just a really enjoyable time of year. So I feel inclined to apologize to you for opening with such a discouraging report. And in many ways, it's not new. The economy is on everybody's mind. President Trump pretty much campaigned on promises of helping the average person to better survive the financial landscape. And I think he's doing what he can as best he thinks. But things are still getting worse. I think if we're all honest with each other, this is a very serious problem that we're facing. And all of this was prophesied in your Bible. That is, again, the difference between this news podcast and the things that we are able to share with you is we come about it from a Bible-based perspective. God tells us through his Holy Day plan, which we're celebrating right now, that his intention was never for us to suffer like this. God, in fact, has created us to be just like him and to enjoy prosperity and beauty and abundance. But that does require obedience and faith. And that's something that this world definitely lacks. The present evil world, as Paul called it, is really challenging, to say the least. And for young people today in particular, just getting started is proving to be nearly impossible unless there's some special circumstance. But even those special circumstances are becoming more difficult to come by. I do want to start with one passage from the Bible that kind of proves that what we're living through today is actually the fulfillment of a request from our forefathers. It's hard to imagine how limited the human mind can be, and it's very easy to, you know, cast blame on the past. And yet I think if you look at, you know, your own personal decisions, or you look at decisions of families today, really the thinking hasn't changed. This is a component of human nature. We have a booklet on human nature if you would like to request that. The Apostle Paul told us, again, warned us that in this end time, human nature would just run rampant. It would be out of control because there's really nothing to hold you back. And yet there's really no chance to move forward. Human nature likes to be in close company with everybody around you. You want to be like everybody else. And that requires a get mindset oftentimes. We tend to want immediate gratification. We want to get rich quickly. We want to support a lifestyle that's abundant, which is natural. But oftentimes, I think what you find today is the price to be paid to enjoy that lifestyle is more than what most people are comfortable with. And again, really, it's beyond reach for the average person now. Human nature is consistent regardless of what nation you're from, what your background is, whether you come from an affluent family or one in desperate need. Human nature still really strangles us. So getting back to what I suggested, our forefathers, this is going back to Old Testament Israel days, but our forefathers were given an opportunity to live under God's way of life. God had given them a righteous prophet as a leader. God was giving them spiritual instruction, physical instruction as a nation. They had already been freed from, you know, bondage in Egypt. They were blessed with a very beautiful, abundant land. And in many ways, you could say, well, this is pretty typical of the Western culture today. Except we refused long ago to surrender to God, to obey God. God was leading the nation through the prophet Samuel in this particular instance, and it could have been a really blessed experience. Now, we have a book here on the former prophets, and I would really encourage you to get this book. It's a thick book. It's a great study, probably subjects and characters from the Old Testament that maybe you didn't realize there was so much to learn from. It is a book of prophecy. It helps explain where we are today, the situation we're in. And you'll see from this example that I'll read here in just a moment, it comes from the time of the judges. And as the book points out, the period of the judges was some of the darkest history of the nation of Israel. Even to this day, such dark history. Everybody was motivated, as the Bible says, by what they could get. There's a common phrase that you read over and over again where everybody just does what was right in their own eyes. They were out to get. It says at two different times in the book of Judges, but the principle is conveyed over and over there. Rather than submit to God, they chose to try to do things their own way. They lived for what was best for them. They lived for what they could get. And nowhere did you find in that society a focus on giving. Now, giving is very contrary to human nature. Giving doesn't seem like it's the solution to the problem. And most today would argue, I can't afford to give. And the Bible would tell you, you can't afford not to give. You can't afford not to submit to God. Because if you're going to fight this battle on your own, you're going to find that you come up short. If you care to read along with this passage, I'm going to read to you most of 1 Samuel chapter 8. It's a well-known passage here, and I'll begin in verse 4. It says, then all the elders of Israel gathered themselves together and came to Samuel unto Ramah and said unto him, behold, you are old. Your sons walk not in your ways. Now make us a king to judge us like all the other nations. And so here you find a group of leaders that aren't happy with the current leadership. Blame it on age. Blame it on the fact that your sons are going to do things differently. Essentially, what they were saying is, we reject you as our leader. This was a prophet of God. And I think when you read through the account and you study the history, they really wanted to prosper according to their schedule of time. That's not how God does things. God does intend to bless us. God is encouraged and anxious to bless us. But again, it requires faith and, most importantly, obedience. Carrying on verse 6 here, it says, the thing displeased Samuel when they said, give us a king to judge us. And Samuel prayed unto God. A great response from a leader. He was discouraged because he knew that what they had was the very best opportunity they could have to succeed. They were rejecting that, and so he brought their request before God. Verse 7 gives us God's perspective. The Eternal said unto Samuel, listen unto the voices of the people and all that they say unto you, for they have not rejected you, but they have rejected me, that I should not reign over them. God has created us as free moral agents. You know, if we choose to go out and buy something we can't afford, to take a job that won't meet our minimum requirements, God says that's your choice. But there are going to be consequences for the decisions we make. And so God wasn't going to force his way on the Israelites. God doesn't force his way on us today. God wants us to come to him and to listen to his voice. We can claim we're rejecting the Democratic Party or the Republican Party, or that we're conservative or we're liberal. We can claim whatever we want, but ultimately, the one that we're rejecting is God. Verse 8 says, according to all the works which they have done since the day I brought them up out of Egypt, even unto this day, wherewith they have forsaken me and served other gods, so do they also unto you. Times haven't changed. And quite honestly, this history is thousands of years old. And you can make the same observation today. They're just doing the same thing that they've done in the past. They've forsaken God. They don't seek God to solve their problems. They serve other gods, like money, like things, whatever it might be, and they don't go to God. Verse 9 says, now therefore hearken unto their voices. Howbeit, yet protest solemnly unto them and show them the manner of king that shall reign over them. This is one thing that I love about God, that we all should love about God. He does allow for us to make our decisions, but God also will warn us of the consequences of those decisions. You know, if we make a commitment to God to keep his laws, to tithe faithfully, or whatever commitment we make to God, God is very happy to tell us to expect blessings. They might not come as we would want or think, but they are in our best interest. Conversely, though, God tells us as well that if you want to go this way, I'm warning you, this is what's going to happen. Free moral agency is quite a blessing if used responsibly. And it does require character to choose God's way. And the beauty with God, again, is he's utterly reliable. If he promises to do something, he's bound by his word. So think about some of these words that I'm going to read to you next as the prophecy continues here. This is God's warning to Old Testament Israel. If you want to be like everybody else around you, if you're not satisfied with my leadership or my rules, then this is what you can expect regardless of your, you know, economic plan or your political agenda. This is what you can expect. Verse 10 says, and Samuel told all the words of the Eternal unto the people who asked him for a king. Verse 11 says, and he said, this will be the manner of king that shall reign over you. It's a given. This is what's coming. He will take your sons and appoint them for himself, for his chariots, and to be his horsemen. And some shall run before his chariots. And he will appoint him captains over thousands and captains over 50s, and will set them to ear the ground and to reap his harvest and to make his instruments of war and instruments of his chariots. We can just pause there for a moment and think of the reality of that, whether it be a draft to fight in a military or just the military industrial complex that really thrives and causes our economy to thrive. Well, that's generally not so much intended to help the individual, but more so to benefit the king, the nation. He will take your sons. They are subject to the king, the government. That is just a given. Verse 13, he'll take your daughters to be confectionaries and cooks and to be bakers. He'll take your fields, your vineyards, and your olive yards, even the best of them, and give them unto his servants. Right? He might just make sure that his constituents, those that support him politically, benefit the most. We see examples of that today, even in the current administration. It's just the way of man. It's human nature. God says, if you want to stray from me, I'm equitable. I'm your perfect judge. But if you want to go your own way, then you can expect this. You are going to lose the benefit of your labors. It is now going to be guided by the government. Verse 15, he will take the tenth of your seed and of your vineyards and give to his officers and his servants. He will take your your manservants, your maidservants, and your goodliest young men, your asses, and put them to work. Verse 17 says, he will take the tenth part of your sheep, and you shall be his servants. You know, whether it be human labor, whether it be the fruits of the land, the product that you create, all of it is subject to government or oversight by men, right? You might be a farmer right now, really struggling as the government for decades has bounced around. Well, how are they going to really handle this farm bill? What kind of subsidies exist? I just saw a headline today that said that the farmers are really being hurt badly by the tariffs. And yet you see these promises of, you know, commitments for foreign nations to buy our product. But today, those farmers that have invested money, borrowed money to raise today's crop, well, today's crop isn't really all that appealing to foreign countries, just as prophesied. Verse 18, you shall cry out in that day because of your king, which you shall have chosen you, and the Eternal will not hear you in that day. From the time this was spoken to this present time, again, you can think of the different political divisions, regardless of which country you live in, right? You have what you asked for, and you're not going to like it. You're going to feel oppressed, and you're going to cry out to me, but I'm going to remind you that you chose this. You've walked down this path. And ultimately, it's not just following a man, but men are influenced by Satan, the devil. And that's what we get to as we look at this current situation. Satan wants to destroy people's faith. Faith is just trusting God and believing God. A good example of this is when disaster happens, when the economy falters and people say, well, where is God? And God says, well, you chose this path. I'd let you go that way. If you would have stuck with me, God says, it could likely be very different. But there is a lesson to be learned. There is a God of this world, and he is intending to deceive, to destroy, and even kill. That is your decision. Verse 19 says, nevertheless, even after they prayed to God, as it says there in verse 18, and God says, I'm not going to listen. Consider verse 19. Nevertheless, the people refused to obey the voice of Samuel. They said, nay, but we will have a king over us, that we also may be like all the nations, and that our king may judge us and go out before us and fight our battles. So how's that worked? How is that working right now? Especially in the end time nations of Israel, looking at Judah, we have what we've selected. They just wanted to be like everybody else. Human nature, right? Keeping up with the Joneses, or not wanting to stand out as being, you know, religious or, you know, an adherent to what God teaches. They take their chance. They roll the dice, as this world would say, and they come up losing every single time. Now, you can study prophecy like this and look at the consequences for bad decisions, but then reverse it and consider what you have to do to receive the other. The last few verses of this chapter, Samuel heard all the words of the people. He brought it to God. The Eternal said unto Samuel, listen unto their voices and make them a king. That's what they want. They won't be satisfied until they have a king. So, you know, do as they say and let them know you've been warned. You have been warned. And so today, as a nation, we have been warned. We are suffering the consequences of decades, centuries of bad decisions. There have been a few highlights, a few, you know, peculiarities where somebody did it right. And those examples, sadly, have not taught us very much. So that's just one example from the Bible. And yet, how relevant that is to today. That seems ludicrous to suggest to an economist, to a politician, to a young person, that if they would choose to have an allegiance with God, they would have a much brighter future. That doesn't seem like a likely option. And so today we are living through the world of asking for a king to be over us, like all the other nations. Today, I was looking today at the Tax Freedom Day. We've discussed this before. Just to give you a quick definition, that's the first day of the year on which a nation as a whole has theoretically earned enough money to pay their taxes. So this is a day on the calendar where, if you just think of it figuratively, if you look at a whole year, how long do you have to work from January 1st moving forward? How long do you have to work before you've satisfied your average tax debt? That's what Tax Freedom Day is. Once you cross that date, then the money earned from there theoretically is yours, or it's at your disposal. So I have some statistics here. I'll just go through them quickly. In the year 1900, Tax Freedom Day came 22 days after the year started. And the tax burden on the average American in 1900 was 5.9%. Moving forward to 1950, you advance all the way to the end of March, the tax burden was 25% for all intents and purposes. Move forward to the year 2000, you had to work until May 1st before all your tax liability was satisfied. The average tax burden was 33%. Sounds a lot like 1 Samuel chapter 8. Well, your sons are going to work for the government. The government's going to take their cut of this and that. All the way till May 1st, that's really discouraging. Really discouraging, 33%. The numbers fluctuate between 33% and 30% as you move forward. 2024 is the last year where they have an accurate figure. And you had to work till April 16th. The day after your taxes are due, ironically, the tax burden was 29.2%. That's taxes collected, paid to the government to fund the government operations, which some of those government operations, again, harken back to 1 Samuel 8, feeding the military-industrial complex, fighting wars. You not only surrender your income, there's a strong chance you might surrender your young men or women in government service, in military service. That's quite a burden to shoulder. Those are heavy prices to be paid. And again, I hate to use the word over and over again, but it's discouraging. Discouraging, to say the least. I was just watching the news yesterday, and it was reported, and I'm presuming this is true. I heard it on national news, which actually, now that I think about that statement, means it's probably false. But the report was that the governor of Illinois, the governor that refuses government help to, you know, fight crime, and the governor that supports, you know, free health care, free benefits for everybody. We don't want to, you know, rule against or be against those that are here illegally. Everybody deserves access to health care. Everybody deserves access to these benefits. And you might argue, well, that could be possibly true. If everybody contributed to that were able, there are going to be some that are not able. But by and large, what we're seeing today are these horrible problems financially, where states are billions of dollars in debt. Seems unthinkable. Anyhow, the state legislature just passed a new tax, $1.50 charge for every box that's delivered to your house. So if you order from Amazon, if you order an auto part, if you order furniture, in addition to paying regular sales tax and paying for the item, now there's an extra $1.50 delivery fee that will be assessed on every single delivery. Now, that might not seem bad if you're making ends meet okay, but what if you have limited transportation? It was kind of a sobby, feel good, feel bad story on the news about the elderly, about those that don't have transportation that really require delivery service. Many are on a fixed income, and this just adds to the burden. It adds to the burden. But they don't need any help from the federal government. They're unwilling to change their ways to help their community survive. All of these taxes just eat into the possibility of the American dream. It's, again, very unlikely to achieve that. I have another clip here that I'd like us to watch. Clip on CBS News, please.
In a recent CBS News poll, 2 out of 3 Americans told us they're stressed about their own finances. 3 out of 4 said their incomes are not keeping up with inflation. That's a lot of people struggling to make ends meet.
So many of us do have to work 2 jobs to make ends meet. But it takes multiple incomes to survive in this economy.
I always grew up thinking about the stereotypical American dream where you own a house and you have a yard to play in. And I think that dream is dying.
That dream is dying. That's so sad. Financial stress, as they report there, you know, a large percentage of people just stressed out about their finances. Stress is not healthy, right? Stress can lead to health problems. It most definitely leads to interpersonal problems, perhaps even tearing apart families. It's a cascading problem where you have the stress trying to pay your bills. You have, you know, the need for 2 incomes, who's watching your children, you know, you're not living where you want to live. So many problems. Financial stress, it can tear apart marriages and family. We have another book that I'd like to recommend. This is Why Marriage Soon Obsolete. And it's an expose on God's purpose for marriage and just the fruits of it dying out as an institution. It has been just vigorously attacked by Satan, the devil. I mean, socially, financially, as we're seeing now, it's just quite confusing, and it's not a good option financially like it used to be. And that shouldn't factor in at all. But again, people are getting what they want or what they choose. And it just is tearing apart this society. We say often that marriage and family are on the God plane. These are relationships that God intends us to learn from to help us to become God. Marriage and family, and both are devastated by difficult financial situations. It's difficult to split an income. It's difficult to support a family. And so human nature, again, can rear its ugly head and really try to break apart families. I have another news clip here from Fox News that I'd like us to watch, and I'll comment on this shortly.
Well, the American dream is still alive, but the cost of achieving it surging.
I don't think anyone is going to want to hear this. I mean, this is just a pessimistic report. But the issue is, look, if you speak to financial planners, they say start early. If you put about $500 a month away in your 20s, you'll have about $1.5 million in your 60s, and they say, don't plan to fail, we fail to plan. Oof. So if you know the American dream costs so much money and you're worried about not having enough for it, start early with whatever you can.
The numbers are staggering right now. It's not just, you know, the cost of homes. You look at insurance, you look at car insurance, you look at homeowners insurance, you look at real estate taxes in general. It is very, it's very tough right now for a lot of people, especially the younger generation.
Well, and I think, and you might feel like this as a millennial, some of this is just, it just seems impossible that people give up and they say, I'm just going to fly by the seat of my pants and not worry about these bills and just pay what I can, because it's scary to a lot of people.
You hear from millennials and Gen Z that they think this is all going to collapse. There's not going to be a future waiting for them. And so they're not even worried about this stuff.
It's just burying your head in the sand. And to a large extent, it's hard to blame those of the younger generation. They're powerless to change it. These costs are surging, to borrow the terminology from one of those hosts there. It's not just on the average increase. And as we'll quote here from another article that was in Investopedia, the costs have been increasing ahead of or outpacing earned income for 50 years. And it feels like it's on an exponential trajectory where it's not likely to change. The suggestion there that in your 20s, saving $500 per month, I mean, that's ludicrous. If you're in your 20s right now, if you're not living paycheck to paycheck, you're either into a really good gig or it's very atypical. Asking them to save $500 a month, to be that disciplined, to be able to continue doing that as they go through the emergencies of life, it is just unthinkable. Now consider this. Those calculations are based on today's figures, a $5 million requirement to live comfortably and achieve the millennial dream. But it's going to take you 40 years of savings to reach that threshold. Is there a slight chance maybe that the cost will increase over that 40-year period? Well, just look back at what's happened. $500 a month, I think you'll find, didn't even come close. And it's an impossible ask for these young people. I mean, other costs that they left out, utility expenses are on the increase, maintenance on a home, and the cost of supplies, inflation, everything that you put all of this together, and you can very much appreciate why the current generation of young people that are entering the workforce or that have been there for a few years, they're having to make difficult decisions. And I'm going to quote that in a moment. They're having to give up on certain aspects of what used to be considered the American dream. And that is very difficult for these young people to decide. There's not really a way out of it. Rent prices are exceptionally high right now. And that's really creating a conundrum for individuals. The rent prices, where you lose your monthly investment, is nearly equivalent to the cost of owning a home. But the risk of rent, of not owning a home, or the risk of, how do I say this? If you rent, you don't have to worry about maintenance. You know, a new roof, a new air conditioning, that can be a five-figure expense on top of your regular costs. And so renting in many ways does seem like an attractive option. Just the cost of living is tremendously high, as they noted. There's no way you can afford to save the money that they're recommending you save. There is another passage in the Bible, a number of them actually, that predict the mindset of the young people, right? You can study 1 Corinthians 15, verse 32. You can look at Isaiah 22, verse 13. Jesus Christ gave a parable that basically say that, you know, individuals live for the moment. They say, well, let's eat and drink and be joyful today because tomorrow we die. We don't know what tomorrow's going to bring. We'll pay what we can right now and enjoy it, but there's no hope for the future. Is that any way to grow up? I think not. Mr. Armstrong wrote a very popular book entitled The Seven Laws of Success. And we probably have one sitting here. I don't have it in front of me. There it is on your screen. If you haven't received this book, or if you don't have it, or if it's been a while since you've read it, please request your copy. You can see the toll-free number there. You can go to the website, thetrumpet.com, click on the literature tab. You can even download a PDF right away. If you've read it before, study it again. These are laws of success. In that booklet, Mr. Armstrong says, as I said once before, most people have no aim. They are merely the victims of circumstance. They never planned purposefully to be in the job or occupation in which they find themselves today. They do not live where they do by choice, that is, because they planned it that way. They merely have been buffeted around by circumstance. They have allowed themselves to drift. They have made no effort to master and control circumstances. A really profound statement. And and probably true for the overwhelming majority of people. They are where they are because that's how it is. They settled there and it's impossible to move out. They don't know if they can find a job where they move. It costs money to move. They can't afford where they are, and so they just live where they do. And so for young people, if I could be so bold to give you a little advice, you have to really make some important and big decisions at a young age, because typically where you start is often where you're going to live for quite a while. And so, you know, make a wise choice. Plan and do your best to obey God's laws. Plan, and you probably won't achieve the American dream by today's economic standards, but you will find yourself well taken care of. I was just speaking to one of our producers, and he made that point. He's not probably able to save $500 a month, and yet he's living God's way, and he has a lot of those components of the American dream. And I can testify to that myself. I know a lot of people, a lot of brethren in our church that are doing well enough in this very difficult society, but many of us parents, we kind of lament what our children are facing. It is a different world, to say the least. We do have to plan ahead. And another nugget that you've heard many times before, you're going to have to live within your means. You might want a different car, a bigger apartment, a different type of budget or vacation. If you can't afford it, don't fall into a debt trap. Interest rates are unthinkable. Between paying your taxes and paying interest on borrowed money, you're left with nearly nothing of disposable income. Obviously, you'd have some, but really that burden is terrible. And so, like it or not, we need to live within our means. The past few generations have not experienced the American dream as it once was enjoyed just a couple decades ago. I have several quotes here from an Investopedia article. This was posted about a week ago on September 23rd, 2025. And the title of the article is "Americans Say They Are Reducing Spending and Budgeting Strictly, Yet American Dream Feels Unattainable." It's really a great study if you wanted to download it later, but I'll give you a few highlights. They say in here, many Americans are tightening their belts these days, whether that means sticking to strict budgets or cutting back on everyday spending. But even with those efforts, a growing number worry they'll still fall short of the big life goals like buying a home or retiring comfortably. You see that word a lot, stress and worry. It's not healthy. And you can't escape it unless you're obedient to God. And it's a cascading problem. If you're not participating in the economy, spending like the leadership would like you to, the economy starts to grind to a halt. Prices increase, materials increase, cost of labor increases. It's a terrible cycle. And so young people are trying to, all people, are trying to live within their means, which generally means cutting back. This article continues. In a report released this week by U.S. Bank, about 63% of Americans said they have given up on at least one financial goal, like home ownership or having children, because of the cost. That's based on a survey of 5,000 people. Gen Z had the biggest negative outlook, with 76% responding that they've given up on a financial goal. That's even as 68% of the survey respondents said they are following a budget, along with 64% who said they are spending less on leisure activities, and 57% who are creating a financial plan as Americans deal with the rising cost of living. That's a lot of numbers, but the point is that people are trying to live responsibly. And the majority of them are finding, even though they are, they're surrendering on their dream. And what they're surrendering is of tremendous price, of tremendous value. Deciding to have a smaller family or no children, to have a home or some other luxuries, as we'll talk about in a moment. And I have to wonder that if you're hard at work and you're doing all you can to save, but you're surrendering more and more of your dream, does that impact your work ethic? Does that impact your desire to please your boss? I mean, you put in a lot of effort only to find that you can't really enjoy it. As I'll get to here toward the end of this program, this nation is under a curse. The end time nations of Israel in particular, God set them up with righteous leadership like Samuel, but they chose to do things like everybody else. Those that didn't have the benefit of God's direction in government. Those that didn't have the benefit of God's blessings. No, they wanted to be like everybody else, even though they were warned. And so we find this hopeless existence today. And it's not just the Western nations. It's the entire world starting to give up on plans of family. Family is the most precious, blessed gift God can give you. And to have to choose not to have children because you can't afford it, it just makes your heart bleed. They continue across generations. 81% of the total survey said they think it will be harder for them to retire than it was for their parents as the cost of living continues to increase. For those thinking about life after retirement, 63% said they are concerned they might have to come back to work after retiring. And that's a definite reality. Just look at the workforce that's out there. It's difficult sometimes to walk into a store and see some of the people that are working that quite honestly you wish they didn't have to work. Those that are elderly, those that are maybe disabled or infirm, there are some people that just love being around people and more power to them if they want to continue to work. But it's sad when you see so many working that had tried to, you know, prepare for a life where they wouldn't have to work, where they could slow things down and enjoy somewhat of a retirement. But that reality is, it's just not there. It's not there. And as that survey pointed out, 81% of those asked, over 4,000 of the 5,000 individuals polled, they know, we know it's going to be harder for us than it was for our parents. This article continues, in the second quarter of 2025, the Bureau of Labor Statistics said the median full-time worker in the United States, of which there are 121.5 million, made $1,196 per week. That equates to a salary of $62,192, which you would need to earn consistently for about 81 years to afford Investopedia's America Dream, longer than the average U.S. lifespan of 78.4 years. In other words, it's impossible. At today's wages, you'd have to work from the grave to achieve the American dream. $63,000. I mean, that's just slightly more than half of what they recommend that you earn. It's not going to end well. I just gave a guest lecture to our personal and family finance class here at the college. And I was talking to the young people and I was telling them how difficult this was for me. As I grew up, my parents, my counselors, everybody advised, you know, go to a four-year college degree program, get your degree. It pays off in the end. It's a little pricey at the start, but it's the only way to really, you know, make certain you're going to have that American dream toward the middle and end years of your life. And that's simply not exactly true anymore. Mike Rowe, a famous comedian, actor, he's a voiceover for a lot of different documentaries and podcasts. He was recently interviewed, and he's recommending to young people that they get into the trades, that they avoid the costly four-year degree program for a number of reasons. At first, you know, you don't even know what they're going to teach you. Will it be of any value, or is it just a social indoctrination? And then the likelihood of graduating with a sizable debt is pretty certain. And then the certainty of getting a job is not as certain as it used to be. The future is not the same. And so the trades are quite appealing now because the trades represent what this economy needs the most: electricians and plumbers, right? Individuals that are skilled blue-collar workers to build, you know, the additional power plants, to, you know, to make it possible for AI and data farms. And this world is changing. And so I encourage young people to at least consider, prayerfully consider the trades as a future, you know, profession. Many of them go through 4 years of college here. They graduate debt-free from this program. We've given them a solid foundation. We've really tried to expose human nature and lust and coveting and greed, and tried to get them to, you know, tamper that and to develop a strong work ethic. And so here we're encouraging them. We're encouraging them to find a job where you can get to work right away, because you need to these days. You need to get right to work. One more news clip here. This is from KBTX News.
Affording the American dream is getting more expensive, according to a new analysis from Investopedia.
Everyone has a different price tag on their American dream, but when we looked at what people want, the wants that people have, not the needs, it totals to more than $5 million.
Investopedia's Caleb Silver says they looked at eight pillars of the classic American middle class aspiration: retirement, owning a home, raising two children and paying for college, health care, buying a new car, yearly vacations, owning pets, and paying for a wedding.
Every component of the American dream has risen in price, not just over the past year, but really over the past 25 years.
Silver says several of these components have outpaced inflation. And while many Americans pursue some version of this life, the economic reality is it's getting harder to achieve it.
Reality, the reality there, the American dream. In many respects, if you've grown up in one of the Western nations, again, the American dream is not something really exceptional. It's about raising a family and providing your children opportunity, living in a home, working hard, you know, for 30, 40, 50 years maybe, but being able to retire, to afford vacations and some of the finer things in life. But as they pointed out, everything's getting more expensive. That news clip had in their graphics how they broke down that $5 million need. They estimate $1.6 million is required for retirement. That is to sustain your living standard without having to work. Owning a home, nearly $1 million. And again, if you look at rent, it's not that much different these days. Raising two children, that is something that hopefully nobody has to surrender that idea. But children are expensive, very expensive. And again, that includes, you know, putting them in college. That would be one way to lower those costs. Healthcare. On their chart, nearly $500,000. Now, again, God has some health laws that, if obeyed, promote blessings. We still are physical. We still are going to break down and have some challenges, but you shouldn't need $500,000 if you're obeying God. So there are ways to diminish some of these anticipated expenses. Buying a new car, they estimate $900,000. That's hard for me to wrap my mind around. Except if you just go, you know, play around, look on the internet and see how much a new car costs these days and the financing, you'll see that that's probably a pretty accurate figure. Annual vacation is included, which I would definitely encourage. Pets. I'm not a huge pet person, but I know pets are very important to people. And in a lot of ways, I think they can really add a lot, especially to a family with children. They can be companions to a certain extent for a couple or an individual, but they estimate $40,000 to pay for pets. You have to, you know, use discretion and carefully weigh that out. And then lastly, they had a wedding in there at $38,000. Again, as much as you'd like to, I think some difficult decisions have to be made. That's an awful lot of money to spend on a quick ceremony. You should have a beautiful ceremony. It pictures something absolutely spectacular. And so I'm not advocating for going totally cheap, but $38,000 is quite a hefty price to pay. So I did a little math, and please don't check me because you'll probably find that I'm wrong. But if you worked from 22 years old to 65, the typical work span of, you know, an average American these days, and if you needed to earn $5 million during that time, it would require an average salary each year of $116,000. Now, I don't know if their calculations factored in taxes or not. So you might need to earn upwards of $200,000 a year. For most people, that's just not practical. Not for 40 years. You know, maybe toward the sunset years of your working career, you might, you know, be blessed to earn that kind of a living. But starting out at $200,000, I don't see how it's possible. It's not practical. So I had another quote here from Fortune magazine. They cited that same survey from Investopedia and basically drew the same conclusions. And when I was reading through these articles, I got thinking about the lottery. You know, we just had a huge, huge lottery jackpot. And that jackpot isn't just, you know, gifts from the government. The jackpot is made up, you know, from ticket sales. And so the American dream now is to, you know, spend $5 on a ticket and walk away with millions or perhaps even a billion as it just reached. It's not practical. The odds of that, as you well know, are not practical. But I think in a way, it does show how desperate people are. They need a miracle like that. They need, I don't know if I'd call that a miracle, but they need something unusual to give them an injection of a large sum of money if they have any hopes of attaining the American dream. I do want to just, I will play this final clip from President Trump. So he campaigned against President Obama at the time by just drawing attention to the American economy. And think about some of the things that he talks about here and some of the hopes and aspirations that he had. Let's go ahead and play that clip from President Trump, August 2016.
1 in 5 American households do not have a single member in the labor force. Think of that. Home ownership, well, this is a biggie for you. Home ownership is at its lowest rate in 51 years. Now think of that. You know, it's always like the American dream, right? Owning a home was the American dream. It's at the lowest rate in 51 years. So here's a chart. Most of you can see. You don't need very good eyesight to see what's going on. So here's Obama. And here's the end. He's not finished yet. Isn't that a terrible, no, seriously, isn't that a terrible picture? Look at that. Home ownership. So you take a look at what's happened. That's the American dream right there, folks. And then they wonder why 25,000 people come to my rallies and why 10,000 people.
You can see why he's so popular, because the facts speak for themselves. Regardless of the spin you put on it, that chart is what everybody sees around them. And it has gotten worse. That's 10 years ago. And it's not to blame just one individual or COVID or inflation. This is the result of men choosing to reject God and go about it on their own. God warned them, and he warns us today, even in Deuteronomy chapter 4. I'll just read to you this passage, because this shows you the way it could be. Deuteronomy 4 verse 1 says, "And it shall come to pass, if you shall listen diligently unto the voice of the Eternal your God, to observe and to do all his commandments, which I command you this day, that the Eternal your God will set you on high above all nations on earth, and all of these blessings shall come on you and overtake you if you shall hearken unto the voice of the Eternal your God. Blessed shall you be in the city, blessed shall you be in the field, blessed shall be the fruit of your body and the fruit of your ground and the fruit of your cattle, the increase of your kine, and the flocks of your sheep. Blessed shall be your baskets and your store." That's God's intention. That's what God wants us all to have and enjoy, the blessings. And the requirement is pretty simple: to submit ourselves to God, to obey his laws, which are set in motion for our good and for the good of the others around us. It's a way of give, not a way of vanity and get and covetousness. It ends in blessings. God tells us in 3 John verse 2 that he desires above all things that we prosper, that we're in good health. That is God's intention for us. That is his dream for us. That's what is coming. That is coming. And that's what we celebrate at the Feast of Tabernacles. But in the meantime, in this present evil world, until Jesus Christ returns, the problems are going to intensify and get worse. Saving $500 a month, as impossible as that sounds, is child's play compared to what really needs to be done. God encourages us to repent, obey, and believe. And even today, in these difficult circumstances, God will bless you. Thank you for watching the Trumpet Daily today, and I hope you have a really wonderful and inspiring day.